Hey, everybody. Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com. Welcome to Chicago Music Reveal. We are live, 11:30-ish, 11:35. It's jazz time. It's music time. 5 minutes late. I'm a drummer. I'm always late. Sometimes I'm early. Who cares? How's everybody doing? It's Friday. Friday here in the great city of Chicago. And hopefully everybody's doing great. It is a beautiful day outside. Minus the quarantine situation. It's fantastic. I know a lot of you guys are at home. You're probably going to watch the show. Again, I always like to preface this. If the technology goes wrong, goes south, I'm the only one running the board. I'm the only one in the studio. I'm in charge. So bear with me. Just like yesterday when my dog showed up and I was interviewing the vocalist from Brazil, Guai. Great. That was a great interview. I appreciate Guai joining us. We had to reconnect a couple times, and all of you got to watch it live. That's the beauty of Facebook Live here. So, of course, I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com. And also happy to say I am the program director and entertainment director at the Epiphany Center for the Arts. We're going to be opening up sometime this summer. We were supposed to be open April 30th, so sometime this summer, I'm guessing we're going to be able to open up. We're going to do live music 7 nights a week up in the Sanctuary, Epiphany Hall, and the Catacombs. So stay tuned for that series from emerging artists, jazz series, blues series, singer-songwriters, new music, vocalists of Chicago. We're working with D-Case on a couple of big things, hopefully fingers crossed, assuming all of this calms down a little bit coming up in the fall. So be sure to check out epiphanyshy.com. Check out all the social media and sign up for the email list. We'll keep you all posted about what we're going to be doing over there at the Epiphany Center for the Arts. But I am honored to be able to be a part of the entire vision of David Chase. It's happening 201 South Ashland Avenue. All of us have driven past the Epiphany Center for the Arts one way or another. It's that big, gigantic church from 1885 right in the corner of Adams and Ashland. And entertainment, arts, and events. That's the whole mission behind this. It's going to be incredible. So stick around for more information on that. Couple of plugs I want to get in. First off, starting on Monday, at least this is what I've been told, Amanda Capitelli, and I don't have a picture of her because I just talked to her a few minutes ago, so I didn't get a chance to put all that together. She is going to be our new correspondent telling everyone about who's doing Facebook Live shows each week, any news, any fundraisers, any relief funds. And of course, hopefully she's going to be spearheading all of the news about when clubs and venues are going to get to reopen here in the city of Chicago. So she's going to start out on Monday doing that. So hit her up, find her on Facebook. I'm sure a lot of you that are watching know who she is, Amanda Capitelli on Facebook. Leave her a message, or you can comment through here or DM us through Facebook on Chicago Jazz Magazine, and she will get you on the list. She'll connect with you and get all the lowdown and all the information that she needs so that she can push this thing out and tell everybody about your stuff, because all of us need to stay together during this entire quarantine situation, you know. And it's, remember, I always say this every single week, every single day, I should say. Geez, I've been doing this. It's episode 10 already. What we should remember is that not only the musicians are not working, but the club owners are not open. That's not good. And also all of the staff at all of the venues are not there. So we need to be able to support all of them. Check out the relief funds. We have them on ChicagoJazz.com. So stick around for that. And that leads me into the next big news item. We're going to have a brand new Facebook page starting on Monday, Chicago Music Revealed. So this show's going to stream on Chicago Music Revealed and on ChicagoJazz.com, assuming everything goes smoothly. We'll be on both. So check us out on Chicago Music Revealed. We're also going to be launching a new website, Chicago Music Revealed. .com, where we're going to put news, we're going to put upcoming guests that are on the show, and a whole slew of other information. So that's all going to be pushed out on Monday. So stick around. We'll make sure everybody knows about it. Next week, guests, just to kind of preview a couple of things, we've got Jim Sellers, great pianist from Chicago. He's coming on Monday. Lydia Liebman, the PR person to everyone in the jazz world. She's going to be on Wednesday from New York talking about the situation with all the artists, international and national artists that she handles. And, of course, all of the new releases that she's got coming up, including what's happening in New York, because she's there. So that's going to be a treat to have her on. And we've got a few other guests coming up that we're going to confirm later on over the weekend. And we're going to put a whole list together and post those things next week on Chicago Music Reveal. Now, one last plug. We've got the, I mentioned this yesterday, and for those of you that didn't catch me because I was on at a different time yesterday, I was on at 5 p.m., 11:30 a.m. today, and that's where we're going to be on Monday as well, 11:30 a.m. University of Chicago Logan Center had to cancel their entire music series for the rest of the year, obviously, and that's going to skip two different concerts. One of them, though, they are doing a live Q&A, a live Facebook Q&A tonight at 7 p.m. That's going to be on University of Chicago Presents Live on Facebook. So Chicago Presents, I apologize, Chicago Presents Live. So facebook.com/Chicago Presents Live. They're going to do a Q&A with Melissa Aldana, who was supposed to be in town this weekend performing. They're going to do a live Facebook Q&A. You guys can chime in. You guys can leave comments. Of course, we love getting comments from all of you here as well. So feel free to comment. I'll try to read them throughout the course of the show when we bring our special guest down here in a second. But Melissa Aldana, Q&A, 7 p.m. We're going to link that stuff up. I'll probably share it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter for Chicago Jazz Magazine. And then we'll put it up on ChicagoJazz.com as well. Of course, all of these shows are archived on ChicagoJazz.com too. So if you don't get enough watching it live, you can see the replays forever on ChicagoJazz.com and soon Chicago Music Revealed. Now, I need to bring in the man, the myth, the legend, our West Coast correspondent. He's nice enough to get out of bed early out there. What is it? It's about 9:40. He's already up. He's sitting behind a drum set. Ladies and gentlemen, the great drummer, Craig Pylo, on the show. Again, we're finally reunited on a multimedia platform. So, first of all, what's happening? Probably not a lot, huh?
Actually, no. I mean, you know, I think a lot of musicians are really making the best of the situation and using the downtime to thrive. I mean, yourself included, right? I mean, you got this up and running. You look good. I see you working out. Yeah.
Oh, you follow me on Instagram too, but you know, you see my nonsense when I'm lying in the White Sox parking lot stretching and stuff like that. It's always, I get a lot more views while doing that than this. Wait a minute.
So you should do an exercise video, man.
Yeah. That, well, you know, it's not a bad idea. You know, I do look really good with some dumbbells and things like that. It'll be interesting, but I think I'm going to stick to this right now. I've got it dialed in a little bit better. So let's preface this whole thing. First of all, I've known Craig Pylo since 1992, which is frightening. And we still talk to each other. We're still alive.
I think most people would agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
And we're still alive, which is
mind
boggling in itself, but great drummer. He and I met when we were at the University of North Texas. He was a accomplished marimba player back then. Now he just plays drums. And I'm kidding, actually. So he played drums. He left University of North Texas with a degree, actually. He got a degree. Beat me. He got a degree. And went on the road with Maynard Ferguson. And then he's toured with, Edgar Winter, Billy Vera, Player. I know Player's a band you've been playing with. You've done Jersey Boys. You played with Frankie Valli himself for like 15 years, toured all over the world with him. And now you're based out of L.A. with your beautiful wife and child. And you have a studio in your house. You're teaching online lessons, which I'm sure you're available for Skype lessons anytime anybody needs a lesson. But also the thing that I find interesting, this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about outside of all the banter we're probably going to get into and reminiscing about some things and telling people things about each other that they probably already know. But the thing that I find interesting is that you also do a lot of recording and you do a lot of dubbing and you do a lot of drum tracks for other artists through your studio. And that's been changing over the years. We've talked about that in the past when you've been on the show. But you do television music, you do film music. Has that stuff changed? Has it picked up? Has it slowed down? I mean, studio-wise, what kind of stuff is happening now? Because I'd imagine, since nobody's playing gigs and nobody's playing live, you might be getting more of those calls.
Yes and no. I mean, just like the entire world, everything got thrown into a blender about a month ago, right? So, I think people are still trying to feel their way around it. I mean, I got into production music in 2009. To, you know, when you go on the road, you lose all your in-town gigs. I mean, that's just, that's been happening. That's not news. That's nothing new. So around 2009, I had kind of lost the majority of my gigging stuff here in LA because I was traveling so much. So I started writing music for TV and film. I had a few, I still have very accomplished partners and people I work with. And that has slowly been picking up and gaining steam over the past 10, 11 years. So yeah, I've been doing a lot more of that. I mean, a month ago, a lot of the productions kind of shut down. So the music is still being produced, but it's kind of at a standstill. It's got nowhere to go. So it's building up. But to answer your question, like everybody, I'm making the most of my downtime. You know, I'm trying to be productive and trying to use this time to take the handcuffs off the normal parameters I've given to write music. So I'm using this time to try to be extra creative and do cool stuff because, you know, it may gain traction when things get back up and producing. It might not. But again, I moved to West Hills a few years ago. I built this beautiful studio. So being quarantined for me isn't the end of the world.
Well, and that's the thing that I think, and it's interesting because you talk to a lot of musicians from all over the world like I do, but you actually are performing with them and doing different things. I feel like what I'm noticing technology-wise, and, you know, like with me, I've always done, you know, we did the radio thing, then we did video, and then I've done the online video show and
you're
all this.
You're good at. That's the difference between the two of us.
I know how to fake it way better than you, I think is what it is, you know. So the thing that I find interesting, though, is that I think this time, like what you said, because of the quarantine situation, people are having to change what they're doing just out of necessity. And yeah. I feel like in the next 30 to 60 days, all of the musicians that have been sitting on this technology, you know, I mean, just like you, just like myself, I mean, we knew what other stuff we could be doing, how much more expansive we could be doing with it. We just didn't have time to do it because there's always, there's a gig or there's an interview on my end or there's something going on, something's happening. Now we're kind of stuck and we're forced to actually push ourselves into this and figure out different ways and really start taking advantage of the technology. Are you starting to see that? Because I've seen some different things where you're playing some more regular stuff with like 4 or 5 guys. I'm assuming it's on Zoom or something. You guys are putting tracks together and creating tunes and doing different things, pushing it on social media. I mean, it feels like to me by doing that, you're reaching a larger and larger and larger audience with your music. More people are going to know who you are if you're consistently doing that. But now you have time to consistently do that. Is that what you're seeing?
That's exactly true. So many things have come out. Actually, I mean, I don't want to say anybody's capitalizing off this, but a lot of creativity has really been forced to the surface. And it's weird when you're given these extreme circumstances, or I don't know how to qualify it, when you're thrust into this situation and you're forced to either perish or publish. Most creative people I know tend to come up with really cool stuff. And I'm a part of several projects right now. It's hard to narrow it down to exactly which one you're talking about. One that comes to mind that I think you're talking about is this project by a piano player out here. His name is Isamu. He's a great player. It turns out I've known him longer. Anyway, whatever. I've known him for a while. But he started this thing called Stuck at Home Records, which is exactly what you're talking about, where somebody writes a track, passes it off to the next guy, and we all kind of do our part. And he puts together groups of 4 or 5 musicians from all over the country. We play our tracks, we video it, and then somebody, I don't know who, puts them all together. And that's when you see the cute little Hollywood squares with us playing.
Yeah.
But it's very creative music. It's I don't think it was intended to be anything serious, but, you know, I don't think anybody put any limits on it either. So it's as serious as people want to take it. But it is very creative, and I do enjoy doing it. So that's one project I'm a part of. The other part is back to what you were talking about, where we were forced to capitalize off this technology. And, yeah, I've had the drum room in the studio, and I've been doing tracks and producing music, but my online presence has been very minimal. And I look to people like you for guidance for things like that, and my other guys who are doing online drum lessons, which is very new to me. I've never I had my first Skype lesson this week.
Oh, really?
And it was not a big deal. You know, you had to get a separate interface from the one that's in the studio, and a few little gizmos, and a light, and a new, you know, get the camera up and running. But thanks to people like you and everybody who I've been kind of watching what you guys do for all these years, I was able to kind of join the online Skype thing, and I, you know, teach lessons as well. So there's been a few things happening, all of which are good on my end.
Yeah, you know, I actually that one, the one that I'm talking about, the video wise one, is the one where I think I think you've done two of them now, and there's a guy rapping on there or something, right? Or doing something. And that's the thing that I think is interesting, because, you know, it came over through the Facebook or through Instagram feed, but I'm finding from a lot more people, because of the algorithms on Facebook and on Instagram, that more and more people are seeing that kind of stuff because the algorithms are liking it. So I can only imagine you're starting to reach more people, but it's interesting too. Did you know all those guys? You didn't know all of them then, right? They kind of mashed them together and you kind of put things together.
Yeah. Six degrees of separation. It's like asking if you know all the musicians in Chicago. You probably don't know every single one, but you know somebody who knows every single one. And it's the same kind of thing when, you know, traveling throughout the country for the past 15 years, and, you know, Frankie used to pick up local horn sections. So I met a lot of musicians in every major city in the country. And then when you track remotely out here and do production music and stuff, sometimes the tracks were originated in a different country or in a different city. So you end up communicating with those people. And like I said, the stuck at home records thing wasn't my idea. I'm just a part of it. And I'm kind of a proud part of it. I think it's a great concept. And when he approached me about it, he didn't make me do it. Like a lot of guys are saying, oh, you know, the guy made nobody made anybody do anything. It's really like an honor to be playing with these great musicians and to capitalize off our ability to stay home and be creative in our downtime. So, I think it's 6 degrees of separation. I didn't know everybody before the project. But again, it's another cool way to network and to play with people I wouldn't normally get to play with.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the cool thing. And I think people are starting to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And the longer this goes on, the more it's going to manifest. And then it's just a matter of figuring out how to monetize stuff. And, you know, you're off to the races then.
Again, we're going to call you back when it comes to that, because you're the guy with all that intel, man.
Well, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. So let's talk a little bit about your background. I know it, but I'm sure a lot of other people don't know it. But I mean, you know, you got out of North Texas and you went on the road. Actually, it was an interesting story, and I always like hearing you discuss this every time. I've had you on like every manifestation of my, I had two radio shows, and then I had
those were good, man. I listened to those. It was like going and hanging with the musicians after the gig, man. I loved everything you've done. It's been great.
Well, yeah, and then you would call in. And you'd start making fun of me and talking about how I have no ratings and all my sponsors are listening. I'm like, well, thank you for your call, sir. And I'd have to hang up on you. But after you ruined my business a couple times, we came to a determination that you wouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah. It's weird. You didn't ask me to be on a guest for a while. So.
But so you're out in the, well, first, before we even get into your background a little bit, we should talk a little bit about the West Coast. What's happening out there with you? Obviously, California was hard hit with this coronavirus, and all the clubs and everybody is closed down. Are there people out moving around? Chicago, it's sparse. There's still people out moving around, but I mean, I see a lot more masks. I see a lot of people staying way away from each other, and I think that's helping to bend the curve here. I've heard that the curve in California is really starting to bend, but it's even more strict out there, I think, as far as your movement, right?
Yeah, I mean, nobody likes this, you know. Nobody likes staying at home, but we're all doing our part, you know. And it's not really about those of us that are healthy. I think it's about, they're talking about people that are asymptomatic, that you don't know if you have it. So we've all been watching the news. So everybody's trying to do their part. Yeah, California has done a pretty good job of staying locked down. I see a lot more masks and stuff as well. It sounds like we're all living in the same, you know, the same situation with the same confinement.
Yeah, no, we're all kind of locked in. Now, you ended up, because you're originally from Connecticut, and you ended up, you went to North Texas. That's where I met you, at North Texas. We were down there for a couple of years together. Then I left. Then you hung around. You got your degree. And then you ended up going to L.A. And you, how long were you in L.A. before you got the call to go sub for Maynard Ferguson?
I think it was literally months. I hadn't even really unpacked. And that, you know, I think I just did that for, I did one short tour with him in the fall of 97. It was great. I mean, you know, it was a lot of one nighters. You were on the bus every night going from city to city, you know.
Well, yeah, but so talk a little bit, because I remember getting a phone call from you. You were in San Antonio and you flew to San Antonio. I think you played a gig with him there. And it was like cold, like, hey, man, can you sub for me in San Antonio with Maynard Ferguson? Yeah. You did that.
It was one of those places where, you know, it just, but I mean, it used to be, I mean, things now, there's a lot more vetting and a lot more rehearsals before you go on the road. But in the late 90s, it was still possible to just literally get the call and go to the airport and, you know, clear your schedule for 5 months. I mean, that's kind of what happened. But yeah, no, it was a weird thing. And, I don't know, again, we're going back some time. This is 97. So I don't remember exactly how it went down, but pretty much just like you said, I got a call from the tour manager to go out and do that. And then that was the next few months, you know? And it was great. I mean, I know we stopped over in Chicago. We played the Jazz Showcase. Came out to that one.
Well, you drove, you called me, you said you're coming to Chicago. I said, when? You were going to be there like tomorrow. I said, where are you? You're like in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And then you drove up, and that's when you stayed at my house.
Yeah.
Because you stayed because you like slept on a bus for 36 hours or something. And
right.
You had a day off. And
right.
And then we went to Shoeless Joe's, and then you slept for a while. But then you were at the Jazz Showcase. I remember you being at the Showcase. But I always think that gig, even though you didn't do it for a whole heck of a long time, you met a lot of people, and that also gave you the cred. So when you went back to L.A., you played with somebody like that. And isn't that how then your name starts getting around? I think you played with Billy Vera, I think, right after that at some point. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, L.A. is just like any other big city. It's kind of hard to penetrate even with one gig on your resume. But you have to get out, and you have to meet other people, and you have to do a good job. And like I said, there was an email going around not too long ago that I see circulating from all over the place. And I think that has more of an effect on your ability to work anything. And there's like seven things on it. It's like show up with a positive attitude, show up early, show up prepared. It's like things that you don't need to have that take no music ability. Do you have that list somewhere?
Well, I saw it. I know what you're talking about, but it's also like one of those things. It's kind of like common sense, because who would want to work with somebody who shows up late, has a horrible attitude, and can't play?
You'd be surprised how much of an effect that had out in L.A., like literally just showing up on time, prepared, like wear what you're supposed to wear, know the tunes you're supposed to know. It matters. You know, and I think that had just as much of an effect on my ability to sustain work as my credits, you know. But yeah, certainly it helps. And then, you know, obviously going to North Texas helped. Having a few big names on your resume early on helped. But I mean, again, there's no guarantees. I mean, you know, a degree from any university is a piece of paper. You know, a credit is a credit. I mean, it's good while you're doing it, but when you're not doing it anymore, it's kind of a thing of the past, you know, like the minute you're done with that gig, you know, you might as well, you know, you got to find something else. So,
yeah, I mean, that's
the ability to sustain it comes with your reputation and your reliability factor, I think, more than anything.
Well, and that's also one of those things, especially with drummers, right? I mean, we're usually sidemen on a lot of these gigs. So, I mean, you know, you're touring with Frankie Valli, you played all around the world, you've done, you know, tons of stuff. I mean, you got to play a lot of different places. You met a lot of people too. And, but when the gig ends, you know, which it was kind of like a mutual thing, because you did it for 15 years. I mean, it gets to a certain point where things have to move on. I mean, now you've got to get on to the next thing. I mean, it's that constant thing that I don't think a lot of people realize. You know, they sit, they watch a band, they show up to see some band playing, and there's, you know, 15,000 people there cheering and everything else. Unless you're that vocalist right there in the front, regardless of who you're playing with, you've got to have other stuff cooking in the background. And that's why that entrepreneurial thing always happens with musicians. And if they're successful, they've always got three or four or five different revenue streams happening, like you know, with the recording stuff, with the teaching, with the playing and all these other side projects when you're not with your main thing. I mean, that's kind of the necessity of the whole thing. But if you have a bad attitude, who wants to work with you?
And I kind of enjoy that entrepreneurial thing. And again, I look to you for guidance for a lot of that stuff, because you've done a nice job of having other things that you enjoy doing that you're successful outside of your drumming. And you're good at all of them. I mean, even the broadcasting here, it looks great. I mean, this was thrust upon me this week. I never thought I'd be broadcasting or doing interviews or Skype drum lessons from my studio. I built this. This is like my woodshed. This is where I come to sweat and but yeah, you said it, you know, I think, and I don't think diversifying for musicians is a bad thing. I mean, I've always enjoyed it, to be quite honest with you. You know, again, I'm most people, I think, like change as long as it happens to other people. You know, everybody's like, oh, change is a good thing. Well, it is, as long as you don't have to change anything, right? I mean, I like doing what I've always done. I don't want to change. I'm cool with change as long as it doesn't affect me. But these times call for those kinds of things and forcing us into new directions. And I for the first time in my life, I'm really comfortable with some of the change that I've had to endure, not only in the last year and a half since I kind of quit touring full time, but even in the last month since this hit. So I'm like now forced to exist in this room and doing what I do. And I've kind of looked forward to the challenge, and I'm enjoying a large part of it.
All right. So you've also, I should make sure we talk a little bit about the recordings, right? Because you've got several recordings out. You've got your website, craigpilo.com, and then all your social media and everything. But why don't you talk about the last recording you did? Because I remember you pushing it out. It was about a year, year and a half ago or so now. But where can people get it? But also, what was behind that? Because it was kind of an interesting concept that you came up with on that one. You kind
Is that
of
my Christmas CD?
Together. Which one?
Was that the Christmas CD?
Well, the Christmas CD, but I'm talking about the one before that, the actual music CD that you did. And didn't you record it? Maybe it was a couple of years ago, was it?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
The latest one you recorded that was not the Christmas CD.
Unsupervised?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay. Well, yeah, that was okay. So
I forgot about the Christmas CD because that was the one that you were pushing out a little bit and getting some traction on. That's right.
That one, I liked that one because I had some really cool arrangements on there that I talked to a few people and I put a lot of work into. I put a full year into putting that one together. The one that was called Unsupervised, that was from 2011. That's almost 10 years old. The concept behind that, which is funny because nobody really liked that CD. That's the one that got the least amount of attention out of everything I've ever done. The idea was to put together a group and be a band leader. And I wanted the same guys on the CD that I was going to gig out with, you know, and play with. Never happened. Like, we recorded this CD. Never. I think I played one gig and I couldn't get the guys on the CD to do it. So like the whole concept went out the window. Like the first week I tried to put it was like a great idea that didn't work. But the unsupervised CD was like, I recorded it live and, you know, all the wrong notes and everything stayed on the thing. And it was supposed to be like, get the guys, record a live CD and then go out and promote it. And that was the concept and it didn't work. And the critics hated it. They were like, man, you know, there's wrong notes on here. I'm like, God, it's jazz. It was supposed to, it was like, you know,
maybe that's why I like the concept of it, because that's what it was, because I remember you recorded it live and you were going to gig with the same group. So that's why I thought it was interesting, but I forgot about the fact that it didn't work.
No, it was a cool idea. I loved it. I loved that you always ask about like my least successful project that that album sold like 3 copies. Like, if, I think CD Baby called me and was like, yeah, we're going to destroy these because they've been sitting here for 5 years and we had the same 3 copies, something like that. So thanks, man. That's great.
We can't even give them away as coasters. So do you mind if we just melt them down?
No. That was the concept behind that. And I thought at the time I was gung ho about it. Like, all my brilliant ideas. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. It didn't work at all.
Yeah. You know what we should talk about, though? One of your most successful ventures that you did that you didn't make any money on. And those were those cartoons that you put out of people complaining at wedding gigs and stuff. And I'm watching these things. And there's like a million views, 2 million views. And I'm like, what? Because it was on another YouTube account. Yeah. So it wasn't even, you didn't even create a YouTube account. You put these things together. Everybody watching this that are musicians have seen these things where they come in and they're complaining about the band's going to be too loud because that looks too loud. You know, what kind of tuxedo are you? You can't eat, things like that. Yeah. Everybody passed them all around. And then you're telling me one time on the phone, he's like, yeah, did you see those? I said, yeah, man, they're sharing them all over. Oh, yeah, I put them together. Like, what? So basically it's like cartoons that you could create.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you walk in and you're getting yelled at by a catering manager.
First of all, you basically just type the conversation. It's these two Japanese animated characters, but you can control what they say. So you just type in the conversation and they read it back to you. So for somebody like me, I mean, that's just a green light for you. I'm like, wait, you mean they'll say whatever I tell them? You know,
And then we're talking, and I'm like, well, what account is it on? And you're like, oh, it was a vocalist account that you just put it up because you had access to it. And you put it up on there. You didn't monetize it. Yeah. You didn't do anything with it. It just had 6 million views here.
Yeah. And somebody asked me if I monetized it. I'm like, monetize? What does that? What does that mean? Like,
I remember asking you about monetizing.
It might have been you. Well, you weren't alone. I had really important people. I mean, so we'd be on the road with Frankie and stuff, and I'd have the promoter or the owner of the building or the CEO of whatever gig we're playing come up to me and go, man, that was you. And you got 6 million views. How did you monetize? How much did you make from that? I'm like, how much did I make from that? What? I didn't even know you could advertise on YouTube. I'm like, what? Monetize? I don't know. Here's how. Okay, so basically I was miserable coming home from some casual or wedding. I was mad that I even had to do it. And I poured myself
a
glass.
There's that positive attitude we just talked about.
Yeah, no. I'm coming home from a gig one night, miserable that I just had to play a bar mitzvah or something. And I poured myself probably 2 or 3 fingers of scotch, and I started typing. And I know what it was. My brother sent me one of those things with two doctors arguing over a body, and it was something like the anesthesia was stop. We have to revive the guy. He's going to die. And the surgeon is like, wait, but I'm not finished fixing the hand yet. I got to fix the hand. I'm almost done. And the anesthesiologist is like, you need to stop operating or the guy's going to – you're going to have a dead person but with a working hand. And this conversation goes on for 5 minutes, and I'm like – I'm watching and I'm like, well, that's funny, but I mean equally stupid things just happened to me an hour ago. And my brother's like, well, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, watch this. And that's how the first one was born. And my brother's like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, people are going to love this. I'm like, what do you mean they're going to love it? This is torture, man. This is what just happened to me an hour ago, So I posted it, and then I forgot about it. I didn't even look because the YouTube account wasn't even mine. It was it was called Rue de la Harpe Records, which was kind of this throw-together record label that a bunch of jazz things out here in L.A. I was involved in another creative project where there's some great stuff on that label. I put it on that YouTube account. And, yeah, I came back a couple weeks later and it had millions of hits. So I did a few more, and people are like, I'm getting email from all over the country and – I'd show up at gigs and people would want to come say hi. And I'm like, oh, that's great. They want to hear about my drumming and they have a question about how I'm playing paradiddles. And no, you're the guy that did those stupid videos, man. I'm like, oh, thanks.
Well, when I got it I got it passed to Chicago Jazz Magazine from 5 musicians one day. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, do you know? You're like, what? Really? Yeah.
I know that guy.
Hey, we've got a comment here. Rich Weiner wants to know who the amazing guitar player is on Craig Pilo's TV tracks.
I'm sorry, Rich Weiner said what?
He wants to know who the amazing guitar player on Craig's TV tracks is.
Okay, Rich is a great guitar player. Like I said, I've been doing a lot of production music. And Rich is a wonderful guitar player. I think he went to the University of Miami, got a degree in music. And like a lot of our friends, said, forget it, I don't want to do music anymore. And he's a financial guy now, but he's a wonderful guitar player. And that is absolutely true. He does play guitar on a lot of my production tracks.
I actually like Rich because he gave us another comment. He wants to know if wine is an important part of Craig's practice routine. Oh, we got to have him on.
Let's block Rich from – is there a way to block Rich from making any more comments?
This is the comment.
Everybody over here knows that part of recording at the Groove Tower Studios here knows that there's a nice green room and reception area after for when the work is done. We treat all of our employees to a nice glass of wine and a cocktail hour when the session's over.
I remember coming out to your place years ago, and I was only going to stay for 2 days. I think I was there for 5. Hey, they all blend together, As long as you don't go to sleep, it's really the same day, isn't it?
Listen, I remember crawling back to your place in Chicago many times after being at Wrigley Field. And I remember the first time going to a Cubs game, which I'm a huge fan. And you're like, come on, let's go. And I'm like, well, I just, I'm on my second cup of coffee and it's 11. And you're like, well, let's go. And I'm like, what time does the game start? The game's at 7. And you guys go down there to Division Street and start drinking at 10, 11 in the morning for a game that starts at 7. Man, I don't want to hear about a few glasses of wine after a session after hanging out with you in Chicago for a few weekends.
Hey, we could tell stories about you hanging out with me in Chicago.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
For a very long time. But, you know, we'll have you back for that, because that always gets interesting. You know, there's some good stuff there, boy.
Yeah.
But then we could also talk about hanging out at Rip Rocks and University of North Texas and how we used to do that. I mean, that kind of ties in a little bit with the practice routine, because when we used to practice at North Texas, we were both on the, well, I don't know if we were ever on the A line at the World Championship drum line at the same time. I think you were on 1 year and I was on another year, and then we were together maybe once. But anyways, we would practice, not that, we were practicing in the practice studios all the time, but the curfew was always at midnight where they would close the bars. So we'd wait until about 11:15, you'd pound on my practice room door, and we'd jump in your car and head over to a bar right off campus called Rip Rocks. And, you know, and we would have a couple of libations, and then we would get back in the car, go back to the practice room till like 4 o'clock in the morning. It was don't never understand that, but you would understand that if you went to a school like that, because the pressure that was happening there was insane. I mean, talk a little bit about some of the guys we went to school with. You're still in touch with probably a lot of them. And I mean, it's just amazing who, like, you know, when you think about who we were in school with and what they've done. And, you know, I mean, I think it all kind of, all of us have done a ton of stuff, but I think it's that pressure and that competitiveness that we got from being at North Texas at that time in the early 90s, mid 90s, that got us all to a certain level that I don't know if I would be at thinking the way I think if I didn't go through that pressure cooker down there for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot, and I needed the structure, and I needed the discipline, and I needed to be surrounded by that level of talent. Because when we all got there, we all came from, you know, we all thought we were good from the small towns that we came from. And then you get there and you're going up against the best of the best. And I mean, I got my lunch eaten more than not. I didn't get the audition more than not. And again, one of the things the school's really good at is showing you how to audition, and it shows you how to deal with rejection. And why didn't you, you know, instead of focusing on the fact that you didn't get the gig, why didn't you get the gig? Mm-hmm. What did you do wrong? What can you go back and practice and refine so that you do better next time? A separate plug, actually, I just did a roundtable discussion with Soph, with our teacher, Ed Soph, on the Drum Channel.
Oh, you did?
It just came out. Soph did a big instructional series on the Drum Channel. Now, the Drum Channel is offering like a free subscription, I think, this month due to the lockdown. I don't think his lessons are included in that free subscription, but the Drum Channel has a lot of good lessons and a lot of good stuff up there. And at the end of Soph's instructional series, there's a few former students. Obviously, he's had hundreds, if not thousands, but there's a few of us that got together a few months ago, and we talked about what it was like to study with him. And we talked about some of those things that you just said about being prepared and how to audition and how to not be scared when you're auditioning against some really monster players and stuff. But yeah, that's one of the video segments on there. And I think it was, and there was five or six of us there.
Was Ed,
and a few
was
guys,
Ed
I know Carlock and Jason Sutter Skyped in. So there's some guys, there's some names you'll recognize on the panel.
Was Ed on there with you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. He's retired great. Now, right? He's just teaching whenever he feels
just
like
retired.
It.
Yeah, and he called the Drum Channel, and they were filming a bunch of his lessons so it could be a little bit more immortalized, and there's be video of it. And again, I think that's part of the – I really don't – I'm not that dialed into the Drum Channel yet. But the guy who runs it, Don Lombardi, is a great guy. They have a lot of really – if you're a drummer, boy, that is a resource that I would join. I mean, if the amount of content that they have on there, you'd be crazy not to.
Yeah.
That's a huge plug for the Drum Channel. I do not have a membership yet, but I will. And I've seen clips of the thing, and everything that they have on there, the content looks amazing. I've been sharing it with my students, but only the last month or so. So I'm behind the curve on that as well. But the Drum Channel is a great, great resource.
Well, and also we should plug our buddy Rich Stitzel, who we went to school with, who's got a great online
yes.
drum situation happening, Drum Mantra, and I'm going to have Rich on at some point. The guy's still filming videos all the time. He's creating tons of stuff. Talk about another guy that came out of North Texas, super accomplished player, but turned his fascination with teaching, and I think he invented this whole new way of teaching, which is really incredible, and turned it into books. He's turned it into online lessons. He's turned it into video stuff. You've been on some of that stuff, haven't you? Didn't he interview you or something at one point, or have you done? You've gone through.
Chicago, and the three of us hung out one night.
Yeah,
I mean, his book. And looked at it. I didn't get all the way through it, but he's really ahead of the curve as far as I don't know if he does Skype lessons or not, but he's one of the people I called when I was getting all this together a couple weeks ago. But yeah, no, he's really got a nice system. He's got some really great content, and his videos look amazing.
Yeah.
But he's very well spoken and very well pronounced, and he's able to explain a lot of the things he does, which is a really a great quality that I see. A lot of people who are great drummers don't necessarily make great teachers, and it seems to me like Rich has both.
Well, that's
solid player and a solid teacher.
That's the one thing that Soph had, was that anything he could play, he could explain how he was doing it. And that was the toughest part from a teacher. I learned a ton from just taking lessons with him, but also really thinking about how he was explaining stuff to me. I mean, I remember sitting there, man, I thought he was kidding, but I sat in front of a mirror. He wasn't kidding. I was sitting in front of a mirror for like 2 weeks practicing the molar stroke, because that was exactly what my lesson was. Until I got that down, he wouldn't show me anything else. And then once I got it down, it just opened up all the worlds. But he could explain the whole thing. And that's what Rich does too. He can explain what he's talking about and also put it into writing, what he's talking about, so he can get it out to the masses, you know?
And I really think we need more teachers like Soph and Rich and those of us that you know, that studied with him for a few years, because I mean, for me, selecting a drum teacher, I want to study with somebody who can back it up with their playing. I want somebody who can play, not just tell me, hey, this week we're going to do page 37 out of the read book. Next week we're going to do page 38. Okay, that's great, but you know, at the end of the day, you need somebody to shed some professional and experience on that and be able to back it up with their playing. And you know, Soph, we could have a whole thing about what it was like studying with Soph, but this roundtable thing was a little bit of that, where we got to talk about some of our best, and I mentioned some of my worst lessons with him too. So that'll give people some incentive to check out the roundtable discussion. It's a little long, but there's some funny moments. Rich Redman is on the panel as well.
Okay, yeah.
As the color commentator, and but it was cool. But yeah, no, definitely everything you said. Definitely Rich has a good handle on the videos and getting his, you know, getting his concepts out there.
I still remember, man. I still remember you're sitting outside. We could talk about Soph stories probably forever, but, and Doc, you bring up Doc, boy, there's another one, but I still remember, man, you're sitting outside Soph's office waiting to go in for your lesson. I'm like after you. So I'm kind of hanging out. I'm practicing marimba or something. And the door flips open. I forget who was in there. And he comes out and he's like, I can't handle any of this. This is out of control. None of you guys can play anything. I need a breather. I'm going to my pool. And he like left. And you're looking at me like with your jaw down going off. And I'm like, I'm out of here, man. I don't want him coming back. So I left. But he could do that. And then the next day he'd come in and everything was cool. And, you know, he'd start, get back right back to work. But he had that little thing where he'd scare the hell out of you. So
listen, I mean, here's the thing, like, you know, you can equate this with sports or just any general education thing, but don't you want a teacher who takes it seriously?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you want somebody who doesn't care? And the reason he would get that upset is because he cared. And it's hard not to take it personally when a teacher gives Craig Pilo or Mike Jeffers a week's worth of stuff to do, and you either do none of it, some of it, half of it, or most of it, none of that is really good enough. You know, like, do all of it, man. The guy took the time to share his experience and his amazing resume and his talent and his wisdom with you. The least you can do is your assignment for the week. And you're not a little kid. This isn't third grade math work. You're studying to be a professional. And at 18 to 22 years old, that is the time to have that beaten into you. And if that means taking the door off the hinges or throwing a music stand at you to get the point across, then maybe that's what needs to happen, you know?
I don't know. You know, I could practice 10 hours a day, but playing playing Donna Lee down with my left hand on the ride cymbal and my right hand on the snare drum was still tough. Still made
him a lot, man. I remember you being in your room. You hit it hard, too. I remember.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were in there like 10, 15 hours a day, you know. I can remember Doc telling me, I said, well, I went back and I had to sleep for like an hour. Well, you can't get anything done if you're sleeping.
That's right.
Okay. Fair point.
Valuable practice time right there, my friend.
You got me. All right, so where can everybody find out about Craig Pilo and his upcoming live performances on Facebook?
Oh, God, help me. Right now, the best thing to do is to just check out the Instagram feed because I mostly just repost stuff from other people, like projects that I'm a part of. Yeah, I mean, just like everybody right now, we're, you know, it's new to us all. This is a new challenge for people, but I think people are going to rise to the occasion and we're going to dive deep within ourselves to figure out a way to make this all work for us. And yes, there's going to be some change, which none of us like. I don't, you know, we're going to have to figure out how to get more involved in the online situation. But yeah, craigpilo.com. There's some information up there that needs to be updated. Groove Tower Music is my newest venture. That's going to be more towards the production music side of things. That's not going to be really exciting for people to tune into because that's mostly music for TV and film. But my Instagram feed, I try to keep that interesting. My Twitter account, I try to post as much as I can. But again, I'm busy trying to make use of my time, so I don't actually live on social media. I try to punch in once a day, and when I do, I'm looking at Chicago Jazz. I'm looking at your things, man.
Yeah. You're watching.
I'm looking
me
at you for guidance, Mike. We're counting on you to get us through this, man. So keep posting good stuff.
All right, everybody get torches because the electricity is going to go off soon. Don't count on me, folks. It's a message for the day. Thanks, Craig Pilo. All right, so we're going to have you back on in the next couple of weeks to get an update on the LA scene and what's happening out there. You're our West Coast correspondent. So we probably,
I'm proud to be. Proud to be.
And I appreciate you getting up early. I'm sure it's the crack of 9:30 when you're up out of bed. So it's kind of early out there. You usually rise, what, about 1 or 2 in the afternoon probably,
hey,
right?
Man, I have a 7-year-old. You kidding me? I'm up at 6:30 every day.
How's everybody doing? How's Angela?
She's great. How's Christine?
She's good. She's good. She's you guys, I was talking to a buddy of mine last night with two kids and his wife, and I said, oh, so you guys all getting to know each other really well now? Because he was always on the road like you.
Yeah.
He said,
I went to my house the other day, and there was this beautiful Brazilian woman sitting in there, and it turns out she's my wife. And you know what? She's really nice. She seems nice, you know?
She still talks to you, which is amazing.
We're still friends, yeah.
She's awesome. I have no idea why you're with her.
You have no idea why she's with me.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant. All right. So, a couple of weeks, we'll check back in with Craig Pilo. Keep us posted. CraigPilo.com for all the information. And I appreciate you being on. And I'm impressed because neither one of us got down into the wormhole of a lot of nonsensical banter. But that will be left over for next time. We got rid of all the good information now.
What a great way to summarize our interview. We got rid of all the good information.
That's right.
Sum up pretty much all of our interviews, right? We got rid of all the good stuff. Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I'm just impressed. You didn't. Apparently, you haven't exiled any of my sponsors yet. I haven't gotten any text messages yet. So.
I don't. Who are they right now? Who are you?
Okay. Thank you for being on the show. All right. I'll talk to you later before you get me in trouble.
All right. Thanks a lot. Right. Stay warm and stay safe. And hopefully we'll all get through this.
That's right. Hopefully we'll all be drinking on Division Street at 10 a.m. soon enough.
All right, buddy. I'm looking forward to
all
it.
All right. Talk to you. Thanks.
See ya.
All right. Craig Pilo checking in. Let me get rid of that. From L.A. It's always fun to have him on the show. Great information, actually. I mean, he's a killer drummer, too. So check him out. CraigPilo.com. Good friend of mine for a long time. And a lot of fun. And he's going to be our West Coast correspondent, I think. I think that's the way to go with him. Because the more he's on, the more we're going to run out of good information. And the more we're going to be talking about what we used to do outside of practicing and talking about music. So, anyways, thanks to Craig. And hopefully everybody out everywhere is staying safe, staying healthy. Guys, it's Friday. We should all enjoy it. Again, everybody keep safe, keep social distance aware. Everybody stay away from everybody for at least another couple of weeks, and hopefully we can get through this entire situation. Hit Amanda Capitelli up on Facebook. If you have a performance coming up, any information that she could get out, she will. She's going to start Monday giving us updates. Anybody else want to be a correspondent, hit me up and we'll talk. I'm always open to new ideas. The show is evolving as we're doing it, getting lots of great responses, lots of great views each time it goes live. It's on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter every single day, and then also on ChicagoJazz.com. And as a podcast, if you haven't subscribed yet, Chicago Jazz Experience. That's what it is, Chicago Jazz Experience. So just do it, Chicago Jazz Podcast. That comes right up. It's got a microphone there. Subscribe to that. If you like what you're hearing, if you like the interview, share it out, like it, pass it along, tell your family, tell your friends, call the grandkids, tell everybody. 11:30 a.m. Monday, we will have Jim Sellers on, talking about his new recording, great pianist from Chicago. And again, Amanda Capitelli is going to be our new correspondent from the aspect of what's happening on the scene virtually. And until next time, I appreciate everybody watching. Hopefully, I will be able to see everyone out on the scene soon in person. But until then, I will see you next week, Monday, 11:30 a.m. on the next broadcast. Stay safe, stay healthy, enjoy the outside, just stay away from everybody. Have a great weekend, everybody.